All right. Hello, everyone. And hello, Helena. Nice to see you again. I have a story about Helena. She came to my house, I don't know how many years ago. It was a long time ago. And one night we were making popcorn. I had never done this before, but all of a sudden I had this feeling to put cheddar cheese, actual cheddar cheese, in the popcorn. You remember this, Helena? And as it turns out, Helena loves cheddar cheese and popcorn. And so I thought, isn't that funny how guidance even guides us to serve our guests well, you know? And to be honest, I've had cheddar cheese and popcorn ever since. It was my first time, but I fell in love with it. I'm going to share my screen. I have a couple things to show you, and then I'm going to play a song. I'm going to go ahead and share the whole screen, I think, because I have a couple things to show you. The first thing I want to show you right here, the join and subscribe. You see that young lady right there? That's Helena. Can you see yourself? Yeah, it's you. And she says, so y'all are more familiar with her than you know. She's been right there on our website all this time. That's when back when she visited me at my house and we went to Garden of the Gods. That picture was taken there. Another thing that I wanted to show you is this picture that a friend just sent to me. It says, time is precious, don't waste it. And of course, you can see the little boy's time. He has plenty of time, but notice the older man's time. And you know, most of us are closer to the age of that older man. So I thought that was a pretty impactful photo. So I thought I would go ahead and share that with y'all. And then the next thing I want to share is a song. So this is Josh Groban, You Raise Me Up, with lyrics.
Thank you. to more than I can be. You raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shoulders. Raise me up to more than I.
And of course, the last four times that I taught from the Tao Te Ching, we were on verse 15, or chapter 15. And tonight we will be moving, or today, we will be moving on to chapter 16. But I wanted to say one more thing about 15 first, because the reason that we're looking at the Tao Te Ching is for enlightened leadership. And I shared a lot about the master and why the master appears the way the master does. And I shared a lot about purification. But I didn't share what that has to do with leadership. So briefly, what chapter 15 has to do about leadership is that the enlightened leader, of course, behaves like the master. And just a quick reminder of what that means. The enlightened leader would be watchful, like men crossing a winter stream. Alert to oneself, like men aware of danger. Simple or unconditioned as uncarved wood. Hollow or empty like caves, yielding or surrendered like ice about to melt, and amorphous or unpredictable, unable to understand like muddy water. Because they're following guidance, they're not following believed rules, right? Also, the enlightened leader is one who knows that muddiest water clears as it is stilled. And so the enlightened leader, when something comes up in them, instead of acting from that egoic energy, when the egoic energy arises, they are still. They practice rest, accept, and trust until it passes. And only after it passes do they take any kind of action. Of course, that action would then be with the right mind. And that brings us to the 16th verse, or 16th chapter. You know, some books call it chapters, some books call it verses. And I'm going to start by reading the Derek Lynn version first of chapter 16. Attain the ultimate emptiness. Hold on to the truest tranquility. The myriad things are all active. I therefore watch their return. Everything flourishes, and each returns to its root. Returning to the root is called tranquility. Tranquility is called returning to one's nature. Returning to one's nature is called constancy. Knowing constancy is called clarity. Not knowing constancy, one recklessly causes trouble. Knowing constancy is acceptance. Acceptance is impartiality. Impartiality is sovereign. Sovereign is heaven. Heaven is Tao. Tao is eternal. The self is no more without danger. So I think before I even go look at anyone else, I think I'm just going to go ahead and stick with this version for now, the Derek Lynn version. So I want to look at the very first sentence and last sentence together. The first sentence says, attain the ultimate emptiness. And the last sentence says, the self is no more without danger. So when we look at the first sentence and the last sentence together, it really defines what the ultimate emptiness is. I think sometimes we think that we, the person, can be empty, right? That somehow I, Regina, can be empty. But that's not true. And the reason that's not true is because I, Regina, am nothing but ideas. So I can't be present and be empty at the same time. So when it tells us in the very first line of this chapter to attain the ultimate emptiness, it is really asking us to make it our goal to die to the self, or to let the self die, or the ego die, or the mind die. These are all different ways people express it. Attain the ultimate, listen to that word, the ultimate emptiness. So again, the Tao is no different than any of the other teachings that we study. It's asking us to let go of the self, which of course, as you all know, is one of our core values. The second sentence is, hold on to the truest tranquility. And we could look up tranquility in the dictionary, but we don't have to, because this verse actually defines tranquility in the way that it means it. If we look on below, it tells us returning to the root is called tranquility. Right? Returning to the root. And I'm guessing we're not going to find that in the dictionary if we look it up. I would be surprised if I look it up and it says returning to the root. So again, it's being very, very clear what it's asking us to do. It's really asking us to let go of the self and return to our source. Right? Root and source have the same meaning. And the next sentence says, tranquility is called returning to one's nature. Right? So again, if we didn't understand what returning to the root meant, this verse is being very clear. It's your true nature. The only tranquility is returning to your true nature, not glimpsing it, going home. Abiding there. Again, death of the self, death of the ego, death of the mind, right? Returning to the root is called tranquility. Tranquility is called returning to one's nature. And then it says, again, just in case you need a little more help with what tranquility is, it says returning to one's nature is called constancy. And of course, we've seen this in many other of the teachings that we contemplate here, that that our nature is constant. It has no beginning. It has no end. It doesn't change, right? So here we have the Tao giving the exact same teaching as all of the other teachings that we look at here. And it says knowing constancy is called clarity. So when you know your true self, when you know who you are, you're clear. What that would also mean by default is that if you think you're the person, you're unclear. In fact, last week I played a song for you that was from Jesus Christ Superstar. It was Judas singing. And it's really funny because in that song, I played the song, I told you he's acting just like the ego. I said, just listen to the song over and over and over again, and you'll get to know the ego perfectly because that's what he's acting like. But in the beginning of the song, he says something about, I'm clearer now, right? He thinks he's clear. He thinks he sees things as they are. He understands Jesus is wrong. Jesus is putting them in danger, right? And I was listening to Anne when she was teaching earlier from NTI, and she read something about, the blind, and maybe it was the blind. I don't remember if that was the term that was used or not, but I wish I could remember the exact words. It's NTI, I should know, but it's leaving me now. But the idea was they think they know, they think they see, and they don't even know that they don't see. Because they're blind. They don't realize, they don't see, they think they're clear. And so this is really interesting because what this is telling us is as long as we are still attached to the person as who I am, we are unclear. We don't see things as they are. And this takes us back to the beginning of the verse again. This is why we need to attain the ultimate emptiness, where the self is no more. Because that is the only way that we can actually have clarity. I'm going to read a little more of this. It's really a wonderful, wonderful verse. It's the first one I wanted to kind of skip around, but I'm going to read through it, and then I'll go to the next part I want to skip to. Attain the ultimate emptiness. Hold on to the truest tranquility. The myriad things are all active. I therefore watch their return. Everything flourishes. Each returns to its root. Returning to the root is called tranquility. Tranquility is called returning to one's nature. Returning to one's nature is called constancy. Knowing constancy is called clarity. Now here's the part I wanted to skip to, but I wanted to read through. Listen to this part. Not knowing constancy, one recklessly causes trouble. I remember when I read Jan Fraser's first book about her awakening, one of the comments she made about her previous self prior to awakening, because it was a good self, right? She wasn't an outlaw like Joe Wolf or John Sherman. They were outlaws. She wasn't an outlaw. She was a good person, a spiritual student, humble mother. And she says, only after she awoke did she see how dangerous or how much trouble her previous self caused. You know, and if you understand what I call the code, if you understand that the thoughts you give attention to manifest in the world in some way, and you pay any attention whatsoever to the thoughts you give attention to during the day, you might understand one recklessly causes trouble. And this isn't meant to make us feel guilty, because if we feel guilty for recklessly causing trouble, actually we're just causing more trouble, right? By giving attention to guilt, we're just causing more trouble. This is actually meant to inspire us. It's meant to help us see, because most of us are, like Jan Fraser, good people. You know, as far as humans go, we're the good ones. We're not the outlaws. And We don't want to cause wars. We don't want to cause school shootings. We don't want to cause parents to beat and murder their five-year-old children. You know, we don't want to be the cause of women being raped. We don't want to be the cause of men being tortured. We don't want to be the cause of any of this. And yet, where the heck do you think it all comes from? It comes from the ego. And when we're believing the personhood thoughts, and we're giving attention to the personhood thoughts, that is enlivening the ego. And that is the cause of those appearances. And again, this isn't being pointed out to us so that we can feel guilty for what the Course would call our miscreations. This is being pointed out to us to light a fire under our butts, right? To hopefully increase our motivation to attain the ultimate emptiness. Because until we attain the ultimate emptiness, we can't help but recklessly cause trouble. You can't be a true peace provider, meaning that that's what you're shooting into the universe is peace. You can't be a true peace provider and be identified with the person too. It's one or the other. And I've watched the news like this for a long time, and I know that you guys have heard me talk about it because I've done it for a long time. When I watch the news and I see these, you know, horrible stories about what goes on in the world, I remember that, first of all, it's like a world pattern. It just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating, right? But I remember that that world pattern comes from the believing energy that I give to my unwholesome thoughts. And I allow it to motivate me to work more diligently every day toward the goal of attaining the ultimate emptiness. Not knowing constancy, one recklessly causes trouble. It's interesting because it doesn't say not knowing constancy, one sometimes recklessly causes trouble. Like I said, it's just the nature of the beast, the ego beast. And we're not guilty for it, but it's time to wake up to it and therefore wake up from it. Not knowing constancy, one recklessly causes trouble. And then notice this next sentence is really interesting. It says, knowing constancy is acceptance. And this is what I would call Tao level acceptance. Tao level acceptance doesn't want to change a thing. Tao level acceptance doesn't want to change a thing, including the school shootings, the five-year-olds being beaten and killed by their parents, the men being tortured, the women being raped. Well, later, when we study the Tao deeper, we'll later get to the idea of the pendulum, but I think I can begin to introduce it here. The idea of the Tao is that the Tao is like a pendulum, and the Tao is still. Left alone, it's still. And when the Tao is still, if there is any manifestation at all, that manifestation would be what is called pure, harmonious, right? But what happens, what the ego does, and good-intentioned egos are just as bad as outlaws at this. Really, remember, egos are reckless. It doesn't matter whether you're a good ego or an outlaw. It's irrelevant. What egos do is egos look at manifestation and they see things that they want to be different. You know, for example, I don't want parents beating and killing 5-year-old kids anymore. And then what they do is they push that. Even with that wish, they push that. Some people push it even more by getting, you know, really involved in an angry way, right? But even with just the wish, they push it. And you know what happens when you push a pendulum? It swings back to the opposite direction. I can't do that with my hands. It swings back to the opposite direction to the same degree. Which means the wish creates the opposite. The wish that parents would quit beating their children ensures that parents keep beating their children. The wish that wars would stop ensures that wars continue. The wish that school shootings or violence in general, because school shootings may be temporary, but violence in general is not. The wish that violence in general would stop creates more violence. And you see, this is why when we're attached to the personhood, we are recklessly causing trouble. Because even our good intentions are not still. I mean, listen, contemplate the idea of still and good intentions. And you can see that good intentions are not still. They're not the same thing. So again, the Tao level, the Tao type of acceptance is accepting everything as it is without wanting to change a thing. Because accepting everything as it is without wanting to change a thing is stillness. And stillness never causes trouble. I'm going to call them bad manifestations, just as a description. All bad manifestations come from movement. They do not come from stillness. So not knowing constancy, one recklessly causes trouble. Knowing constancy is acceptance. Now it says acceptance is impartiality. You know, impartiality means not partial. You know, like as tough as this sounds, but I'm going to say it. I do not prefer children who are raised in loving environments over the situation of children who are killed by their parents. You see, if I do prefer children who are raised in loving environments, I am not impartial. You see? I am not still. Therefore, I am pushing the pendulum. And I am creating the very appearances that I'm against. So true acceptance is fully impartial. It lets everything be as it is. And this is pretty much impossible for humans. Which is why, again, as long as you're attached to the personhood, you are recklessly causing trouble. Because it's pretty much impossible for humans to not prefer a child having a healthy and loving environment than a child being beaten and killed by their parents, right? And this, again, is why, as long as we are human, our goal needs to be, and the focus of our life needs to be, to attain the ultimate emptiness, which is the death of the self, the death of the idea that I am this person, the return to the root, the return to the source. You know, A Course in Miracles says that God did not create the world. Well, God in that particular sentence would be the source. So what does create the world? Yeah, yeah, Helena raised her hand. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. We are the problem. Again, without guilt. This is only meant to enlighten us, not to make us feel guilty. We are the problem. Therefore, we have to take ourselves out. And of course, I'm not talking about violence here. You know, I'm not talking about killing the body. Right? That would be ridiculous. I'm talking about our belief that we are these people that we think we are. We need to take that out and return to the realization of our truth. And this is why Ramana Maharshi says that your self-realization is the greatest service you can render the world. When you are self-realized, you take yourself out of the miscreation process. And in fact, you add to the grace, the process of grace in the world by taking yourself out of it. So not knowing constancy, one recklessly causes trouble. Knowing constancy is acceptance. And just in case you aren't clear, acceptance is impartiality. And again, that's total impartiality. Impartiality is sovereign. Impartiality is more holy and more correct than any other ideas of correction. And again, that's hard for humans to accept. Right? Humans think that, you know, if something is wrong, it needs to be fixed, which again is pushing the pendulum. Humans do not realize that if there is something wrong, the only thing that needs to be fixed is my own mind. Right? And by fixing my own mind, we really mean, again, taking ourselves completely out of this game. Stop being a creator of this world. You know, Inner Ramana talks briefly about how we don't understand how we write the script, right? But he asks us to be surrendered, because if we are very, very surrendered, then we aren't involved in script writing. If you contemplate what that means, really surrendered means I am not at all thinking for myself, which means thinking for myself writes the script. If I am not thinking for myself, I will be totally impartial. In fact, Inner Ramana, when teaching us surrender, one of the questions, and of course, the overall question is, what am I to do now? It has a list of questions that are really included in that, so you don't have to memorize this whole list. And one of the questions that's included in what am I to do now is, what am I to think? You know, when I read a news story about, in fact, you know, Jacqueline pointed one out recently, but to be honest, in the last few weeks, there have been a number of five-year-old children killed by their parents, not all five. You know, it's like, wow, let's have a trend. A number of five-year-old children have been killed by their parents in the last couple of weeks. So when I read another story about a five-year-old being killed by their parents, instead of thinking what I think of that, which actually is script writing, if I'm practicing surrender within a Ramana, I'm supposed to ask, what am I to think? Like, I don't even know what to think. What am I to think? When we just start thinking whatever we think when we read those, we're causing trouble. But in a Ramana says, if we are surrendered, then we are script living, but not script writing. In other words, at this point, we still believe we're a person. We still believe we're in a world. But to the degree that we are surrendered, we are already taking ourselves out of the script writing process, which is good news. Yes, Jay.
It occurred to me that, you know, we don't fill our heads with the news of the 5-year-old kids getting killed. Is there a reason you want to read that?
Said the question again. I don't think I understood it.
Well, sometimes, you know, like, I wouldn't go out of my way to read about 5-year-old kids getting killed. I was wondering, are you doing something to avoid something if you choose not to read that or seek out that news?
I can't answer that because people are guided differently at different times. So I cannot give an answer to that. There will be times in your spiritual growth where you will be guided to stay away from things like that. And the reason is because you literally aren't able to control yourself. And so what happens when you read stuff like that is you're causing trouble, causing trouble, causing trouble. So your guidance might say, stay away from that stuff. And then there may become a time when you are then guided to seek it out. And that's because you're at a different maturity level. And now what's happening when you read these things is you're becoming internally motivated to meditate more, to let go of self more. Similar to when Michael Langford writes in The Eternal Means to Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, that by contemplating all of the wars and all of the diseases, you can increase your desire for liberation, right? When you contemplate what the ego does, then it can increase your desire to let go of the ego. So at some points during your spiritual growth period, you may be guided to seek these things out and read them before that purpose of motivating you to not want to be a part of that anymore.
Yeah, so I don't seek out the news, but when I do run across it, oftentimes it does have that motivational effect on me. So I know what you're talking about.
Well, and for me, I suppose I could change my Yahoo, but for me, you know, when I just go onto the internet, which I do multiple times a day, boom, the news is right there in my face.
Yeah, you can't help it, right?
It's just there. Right, there it is, you know, and of course the headlines, in effect, I've learned almost tell the whole story. You don't even have to click on an article anymore. You know, they put all the important information right in the headline, so you already know everything important just by opening the internet. So again, impartiality is sovereign. I mean, contemplate that for a moment. The best way to solve the problems of the world is to have no preferences on how the world should be. And then it says sovereign is heaven. Like, and that's because when you're being impartial, when you're in total acceptance, that's the stillness. That is heaven. Heaven is the Tao. And the Tao here is referring to the source. You are abiding as the source when you're at that level of stillness, that level of impartiality, that level of acceptance. And the Tao is eternal. You're in touch with the eternal truth. And you are totally impartial, total acceptance of everything as it is. And those of you who have done gentle healing, you know all about the loving all method that Michael Langford teaches. And really, that's the exact same teaching. Right? When you're in meditation, you're focusing on awareness and ignoring thoughts, which means you're letting go of the self. When you're not in meditation, you're practicing the loving all method, which means you're letting go of your judgments, your partiality, and you're learning to be still as you move about in the world through loving everything, through total impartiality. And of course, you remember that, again, it's very hard for humans to do that. So the loving all method kind of gives us three levels, and we always reach for the highest one. If you can love it, you love it. If you can't, you accept it as it is. And if you can't do that, you emotionally allow your feelings about it, which I call rest, accept, and trust. But what you don't do is throw yourself into the judgment or how you think things should be. Because when you throw yourself into the judgment or how you think things should be, you are script writing. You are recklessly causing trouble. And none of us want to do that. Or we wouldn't be here, right? And then the last line says, the self is no more without danger, right? When you have gotten to acceptance and impartiality, true impartiality, the self is no more, because that can't happen as long as the self is present, right? It just can't happen as long as the self is present. So when you've gotten to true impartiality, you have also gotten to the ultimate emptiness. And the self is no more without danger. You're no longer a danger to the world. Isn't that funny? I don't think we go around thinking of ourselves as a danger to the world, do we? But that's what this is telling us. I don't think that thought has ever crossed my mind in that way before. I'm a danger to the world. Just by living and breathing and having the opinions that I have. So let me just wrap this up. That's the end of chapter 16. I never got to the other two, but that's okay. I think that one was fine. Let me just wrap this up about enlightened leadership then. You know, this is really interesting for leaders, because leaders tend to have ideas about how things should go in whatever organization they're leading. Which means by being the traditional leader and thinking things should go a certain way, we're causing trouble. We're a danger to the world. And I'm sure that if Lao Tzu was here, he would argue a danger to our own organization, right? The very organization we're attempting to lead. And so what this means as leaders is we, you know, when our employees bring problems to us, or our members bring complaints to us, our very first job is to accept it as it is, not to judge it. Okay, that's what happened, right? And now where do we go from here? If we can say, okay, that's what happened. Now what's best now? And do that without thinking, but with that sense of surrender, right? With that checking in. What's best now? Dawn shared about a week or so ago about a time when she got kind of upset with someone. And she wrote to me and asked me what she should do. I told her she should rest, accept, and trust. Let that emotion, how many leaders do you think would say that? Most leaders would say, you should not ever do that again. That is not good for business, blah, 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 right? I see Helena is asking, is that a book, Enlightened Leadership? No, that's just the name of my teaching. That's the point of view from which I'm teaching the Tao. So what happened, happened. Perfect acceptance of that. No wish that it hadn't happened, right? No partiality that it would have been better if it hadn't happened. Just, okay, this is what happened. This is the question I'm being asked. And this is absolutely the best answer. Rest, accept, and trust. That's just an example of enlightened leadership. And with that, my time is up. So I'm releasing the mic. Bye.